We're continuing with the next malacha, which is Zoreh. Zoreh should not be confused with the first malacha that we dealt with, which was Zoreah, planting. Zoreh is winnowing. Does anybody have any idea what winnowing is?
Yes.
Yes, what is winnowing?
It's when you throw the sheaf of wheat in the air and the husk and the other part that isn't the husk separate themselves based on their weight and the wind.
Based on the weight, yeah. That you throw the kernels up in the air, and the lighter parts get blown by the wind, and then what's heavier, the kernels themselves, fall to the ground. That's what winnowing is. Okay, so that's what took place in the Mishkan, because they had to use the kernels in order to make the bread. Okay, so what exactly is this action? If you picture this action of taking a farmer and throwing it up in the air, and the wind removing the lighter pieces, which are unnecessary, which you don't want, and then you're left with the kernel, which falls down. So how would you, without getting into the action itself, how would you view this? Meaning, except for just describing what takes place, how would you define this action?
Separating.
Okay, mm-hmm. That's one way of looking at it. Separating, because you're separating the, I think it's called the chaff, from the kernel. Any other ways of viewing this action?
Revealing.
It's not revealing, because the kernel was already revealed. That was the previous malacha.
That was Purim.
No, but that was Dash. Dash was revealing. Any other ways of understanding this action?
Well, why is there? I thought there's a husk around it. So aren't you revealing?
You're not removing the husk here, no.
Wait, what's being removed?
Nothing. You just have kernels and a bunch of chaff just together.
Ah,
just random pieces.
It's not attached.
They're not attached, no. They're not attached. Not at all attached. It's just that you want to separate it, because you don't want to go and take every kernel out by itself. So you just throw the whole pile up in the air. The wind takes it, and you're just it takes all the light pieces and blows them away, and you're just left with the kernel. That's basically what takes place.
Seems like
cleaning.
Cleaning. Okay. It's separating. Any other suggestions?
Taking out the garbage.
Taking out the garbage, which is a form of cleaning.
I told my wife that's a malach on Shabbos.
Because of Zora. Okay. And another... Well, okay, fine. So we'll see a different way of looking at it as well. There is a potentially second way of looking at it. So that's just in terms of just the... In terms of defining what's occurring, so far we have basically separating. They don't really discuss cleaning, but it's basically separating. And then there'll also be the second idea, which we'll see in the Yerushalmi. Independent of just how to determine what exactly is going on, there's also something else which is fascinating, which only occurs by this malacha, which we haven't seen yet so far. Which has not to do with just defining the action, but it has to do with the action itself, which is taking place. When you're performing this action, who's performing the action?
The wind.
The wind is. The wind is performing the action.
But you're initiating
But you're initiating it. You're initiating the action, but the wind is the one that's performing the action.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So ultimately, it's done by the wind. Mm-hmm. So, which is a lot broader of a discussion of, is there a biblical prohibition when I do something where it requires the power of another source? It requires the power of another source. Would that be a biblical prohibition or not? This is called grumma, where it's indirect. So maybe why should this ever be a biblical prohibition? And it's clearly that it is. It's one of the 39 malachos, so it's clearly a biblical prohibition. But why should this be the case?
Well, so maybe you could actually redefine winnowing as not separating, but maybe it's harnessing another force.
Well, you're not harnessing the other force.
You're just utilizing
it. You are, in a way.
You're just utilizing it.
Isn't that harnessing and utilizing sound the same?
Well, but you're saying that is the biblical prohibition?
It would answer your question.
No, but that means any time, you're saying that any time I use another force, it would be a biblical prohibition.
Okay.
There is a concept of grumma. We know that there's a concept called grumma, where if I do something indirectly...
So what's the classic case of grumma?
Classic case of grumma?
Isn't that electricity? Like, isn't it?
I'll tell you, a classic case of grumma is, I'm not sure about electricity. I'm not 100% sure about that. But let's say if I pour water onto the cement, and it's going to slowly, because of gravity, it's going to trickle down onto the grass. So I'm not pouring onto the cement. I'm not pouring onto the grass. I'm pouring onto the cement. And there's another force, gravity, which is causing it to go into the grass. So that is not a biblical prohibition. Because that's you're using another force of gravity.
Are you in a rabbinic prohibition?
That would probably be a rabbinic prohibition, yeah. But,
My understanding was that you could do that.
Sorry. That's called Shani. Depends on what type of grumma. But that might be mutter. But, yeah, that's mutter also for the sukkah. The water on the sukkah. It depends on what form of grumma. There's also garmi. Anyway, this is a bigger discussion. But over here, you are using the force of the wind. So that's what makes this very unique. So these are the two issues that we're going to be discussing. Just first of all, defining the action itself. That's the first thing we'll discuss. And the second thing we'll discuss is this very interesting idea of the fact that you're using the wind. So in terms of the first issue, what is this action? So there's very little in the Gemara about Zora. Very little. There's basically this one line. And we'll see two Gemaras. This is the first Gemara and then the second Gemara.
There's very little practically with...
We'll get to the practical applications also. Well, hopefully we'll cover everything today. There are some practical applications. So the Gemara says, Hainu Zora, Hainu Borer, Hainu Merakid. Zora is the same thing as Borer, which is the same thing as Merakid. Why? What's Borer? Borer is separating. Zora is separating. And Merakid is sifting, which is a form of separation. Mm-hmm. That's sifting with like a filter. So Abai V'Rav, Damri Tarvayu, Kol Milsa, Dehav Mishkan, Afagav, De'ika, De'damila, Chashivla. So Abai and Rava say together that anything which happens in the Mishkan, even if it seems to be similar, we still view it as one of the 39 malachos. That's what the Gemara says. Then it says Velachshiv Nami Kotish. So then let me also include when I pound the kernel, which is what you were talking about. When I pound the kernel, so then I remove the outer shell. So that's also a form of separating. Mm-hmm. So Rabbi Shekin Ani Ochal Pito Below Kotish. No, that's not viewed as significant. Because poor people eat the kernel even with the shell.
So is it on the kernel there's a shell?
There's an outer shell, apparently.
Which is actually what whole wheat is.
Whole wheat is the whole, yeah, is the whole kernel. It's includes, with the husk. It includes the outer shell.
So there's a raya from the Gemara that only poor people are supposed to eat whole wheat bread.
Sure, if you say so.
I don't know if that's what it's saying, but I know like in Western, I don't know about this time period, but for like a lot of history, poor man's bread was whole wheat bread, and the upper classes would eat white bread.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I mean that's, yeah. I don't know in this period, but like, you know, in like, you know, England, the queen would eat, you know, white bread, and the people would eat. Same thing with rice. White rice was upper class. Because it's polished. They polish it. They take off the husk.
Okay. So over here, we're not going to include kotesh of removing that because poor people, it was common for poor people to have whole wheat. But what comes out of this Gemara, the key point that comes out of this Gemara, is that Zora, Bor, and Merakid are all the same idea. Right, that's what comes out of this Gemara. It's all the same concept. What is that concept? It's essentially separating, right? That's separating, which is exactly what Rashi says. Rashi in source 2, he says, Hachi gar sinan, hainu zora, hainu bora, hainu rakid. Hainu, what is the question? Kamo hainihu, what is unique, or what is this? Are these malachos? Kolomar, demaflag luhu tana demasis in latlas. Why is it that these are viewed as three separate categories? Balo kula malacha achasein. These are all one malacha, one forbidden activity, dahainu. What is this? Demafrish ochel min apsolas. How are we going to define this activity? It's about removing ochel from solas, the desirable from the undesirable. That's how we define the malacha. So basically what comes out according to the Bavli is that winnowing, the way we define winnowing, is that it's the same thing as borer and merakid. It's the same exact thing. And it's all about removing, separating the desirable from the undesirable, right? Which is exactly what we've been saying until now. I don't think anything has been added from what we originally thought winnowing was, but at least it's clear from the Gemara that that's the case. I mean, some of the Rishonim do explain that there has to be some difference between these. And so the difference between these is just what you're using in order to separate. By Zohar, you're using the wind. By Borer, you're using your hand or a kli or some sort of vessel.
You're using a kli.
No. You can use your hand, but if you don't have to fulfill any of the other two conditions, you need three conditions.
Oh, but isn't it that Merakit is using a kli, Borer is using a hand?
Merakit is using specifically a filter. It's like
a
filter.
Not just a kli?
Merakit is specifically sifting with a filter.
As opposed to like a slotted spoon?
A slotted spoon is really a form of a filter, but what other clue would it be?
I thought any.
Yeah, borer. I think borer. Maybe they say borer is biyad, is with your hand, as opposed to a fork. But we'll get to borer. And merakid is with a filter. So practically, they have differences. The means to get to separating is through different means, but to define the malacha is all the same. It's all about just a form of separating, right? Separating the good from the bad.
But all the nuances of the halacha are the same?
What do you mean by the nuances of the halacha?
And like by borer, it has to be, in order to be mutter, it has to be miyad, biyad, ochum ito psoas.
Well, you're not really going to have that by zora, because it's not biyad anyways.
Oh, so
I don't think you'll have it by the other ones. But it's about separating. It's about taking ochel mitoch psolos. It's about taking the good from the bad, because you throw the kernels up with the chaff, and then the wind takes the lighter pieces, and then you're left with what you want, the kernel. The Yerushalmi has a totally different understanding of what winnowing is about. It's a totally different understanding. If you turn the page to the Yerushalmi says as follows: Rakak v'hifrichaso haruach. If you spit and vihifri chaso, I guess this means, and it scatters out, like poreach, it scatters out, the wind causes the spit to spread out. Chayiv mishum zora, you have violated zora. V'chol davar shu mechusar leruach, chayiv mishum zora. Any time when it becomes diminished through the wind, that's a violation of zora. That's the violation of Zohar. So anytime, so you spit, the wind takes it, so then that's a violation of Zohar. What does that have to do with the original action of winnowing, where you throw the kernel and the chaff up, and then the wind takes the lighter pieces, and you're left with the kernel?
It's very different. It seems different, because in the original Zohar, you have two pieces that you're designed to separate them into different places. Whereas if you're spitting, it's just...
It's all the same piece.
No purpose to it. It's one piece.
Yeah, you don't want. You don't. You're not looking for an outcome of.
Mm-hmm. You're not looking to take anything. Yeah.
So what is it? Just scattering with the wind.
So it's scattering with the wind. According to the Yerushalmi, So it's unclear exactly how to translate that.
This is your translation.
This is based on the Korban Eidah, based on one of the commentaries on the Yerushalmi. He said, "V'chol davar shu mechusar leruach," means anything which becomes diminished through the wind. The wind, right? When you take the kernel on the chaff, so then when you throw it up,
the spit is not diminishing. It's still the same amount of spit. It's just scattered.
Yeah, but that meaning it becomes diminished from the pile that it was originally in, or the spit that the mass of the spit.
So that would include like aerosol containers.
We'll get to all that. Yeah, so that would potentially be a problem. As of now, that would potentially be a problem. So according to Yerushalmi, any time I use the wind to cause things to spread out would be a problem. Which means that when we think about the case of winnowing, so the focus is not about the separation. It has nothing to do with the separation. It only has to do with the fact that the wind causes a pile to scatter out, to separate. Not to separate good from bad, but just to scatter. And that's what winnowing is according to the Yerushalmi. So anytime the wind causes something to scatter, would be a problem.
No, that can't be that. It must be that you've initiated an action which allows
correct.
The wind to scatter.
Correct. Yeah, you have to start that action, which is the next topic.
And but, scattering itself, it sounds like, would not be a problem. It's only scattering with the wind.
Sounds like
it. I mean, let's say I took a... I just threw it all over the place, and I scattered everything all over the place. So.
Or if you live in the desert, and it's, the wind's constantly scattering the sand.
Well, if you're not you, if you're not right? doing anything, so then that's clear that it's not a problem. That's clear that's not a problem. Or this one's asking, let's say you are involved, but you're scattering without the wind.
Like if the object's too heavy to be impacted by the wind. It's like
Or you're just you're scattering. You have a pile of things and you just throw them around on the floor.
Potatoes. They do it all the time. They take Legos and just throw them. Like
yeah, you take a whole pile and you just throw them all around.
There's no wind in your house though.
No, yeah, so that's what he's saying. It's specifically because of the wind.
Uh-huh.
It's specifically when you have the wind also involved in the scattering process. So I think that's true.
What about an electric fan? Or am I getting going too far ahead now?
No, well, an electric fan, well, that's an interesting question. What if you have an electric fan? Is that the equivalent to the wind? Based on what Rabbi Lichtman's saying, Rabbi Moshe, I think, says this, that when you have, like, deodorant, spray deodorant, or whatever it is, any spray, so what causes, even if you want to hold like this Yerushalmi, which is a big discussion whether we actually hold like this Yerushalmi, but even if you want to hold like this Yerushalmi, that wouldn't apply in those cases. Because what's causing the liquid to scatter? It's not the wind. It's my action of causing the pressure. I'm causing pressure. So it's not the wind. It's not an outside force which is causing it to scatter. According to Yerushalmi, it has to be that there's an outside force which is causing it to scatter.
Why?
Why do you need that outside force?
Right.
So
I was saying before we were saying that using an outside force that makes something groma. That's more of a reason to say that.
Yeah, okay. So this is also it's now also
we're saying, fascinating. Now we're saying the opposite. We're saying the only time that it's no good is when you're using an outside force.
Yeah. So I think we'll get to your question, but everybody understand Rabbi Lichtman's question? In general, we say that using an outside force is a reason to say why you're exempt. Like by pouring water, like pouring water on the concrete, and then it trickles down onto the grass. The only reason why it goes onto the grass is because of gravity, the force of gravity. So there, you're not liable. Because it was through another force that it went onto the grass, right? It wasn't directly because of you. It was indirect. So that's a reason to say why you're exempt. Why you have not violated any prohibition. Over here, we're saying specifically because you also have the wind, that's what causes a problem. If you don't have an outside force, it's not a problem. But specifically over here by winnowing, when you have that outside force, that's what causes the problem. So it's very strange. In general, having an outside force is a reason to exempt you. So why all of a sudden over here by winnowing, not only does the outside force cause a problem, it's the only way it causes a problem. Only by having that outside force is there a problem. You need to have that outside force of the wind. So it's a very strange idea. So we'll get to that, but it is a strange idea. Apparently because winnowing in the Mishkan, it was through the wind. So because you had to use the wind, you lift it up through the wind. So then there's a certain winnowing would be this perhaps the only malacha where the definition of the malacha is using an outside force. We'll get to this idea, but apparently by winnowing there's a need to use the outside force. So that's the Yerushalmi.
It also here like in the Bavli. So you're doing separating. So that I hear that that's a significant Malacha, you're making a significant change. You're separating out the bad from the good.
Yeah.
But if all it is scattering, so what are you accomplishing?
Yeah, I was wondering about that also because by the scattering, is it you're not scattering even you're not
in
even
a way where you're separating. It doesn't sound like it from the Yerushalmi. It has nothing to do. Let's say that's all you had was chaff, and you threw the chaff up in the air. The kernels were already gone. You separated that on Friday, and now you're left with chaff. So it sounds like if you take the chaff and throw it up in the air, so according to the Bavli, you'd be putter.
Yeah.
According to the Yerushalmi, you'd be
chayav. Well, yeah, that's Yerushalmi's case. You spit into the air, right. And the wind takes it. That's equivalent to the chaff.
So what are you accomplishing?
Yeah, so I wasn't sure about that. It's definitely not part of the process. It's not about it being part of the process, because the process was for bread, where it was to use the kernels. So here it's just about it spreading out. I would potentially say that the this malacha, we'll see this in a second also, but this malacha might be that it's defined as using a natural outside force.
Like gravity?
Well, specifically here is by the wind, but
we're not
force scattering.
We're not saying that using any natural force.
No, it's not any natural. Yeah, but it's maybe like there's a certain value because you're using an outside force, but it's unique to only this malacha. But there would be by using the outside force that's what gives it like chashivas. Outside of that, I'm not sure if you have importance, but potentially. Okay, so just to review, so we have two different definitions for winnowing about what exactly winnowing is. Either it's about separating good from bad, which is what the Bavli holds, and according to the Yerushalmi, it's about using the wind to scatter. It's about using the wind to scatter. So now we'll deal with the second issue. The second issue is about how could you be liable for Zora ever if it's always going to be indirect? It's not just based on your force, it's also the force of the wind. So how would you ever violate Zohar if you need to have the wind? And so for this, you have to go to, we're leaving the Gemara in Shabbos, you have to go to, tucked away in Baba Kama. There's a Gemara in Baba Kama. The Gemara in Baba Kama is discussing, not Shabbos, but it's discussing just causing damages through creation of a fire. So the Gemara says as follows. Tana Rabbanan. Liba v'lovsa haruach. So if you fan the flame, and at the same time, also the wind was coming in also, it helped the flame extend. So the Gemara says as follows. Im yesh b'livuyo k'delo vosa chayev. Vimlav pater. It says that if you had enough within just your own fanning to cause the fire to reach your neighbor's field, so then you're obligated to pay for the damages. But if your fanning does not have that ability, and it was only because of the wind that it causes it to go to the next field, so then you're exempt because it didn't happen through you. It happened through the wind, it didn't happen through you. Right? So if it's you alone, so then fine, so then even though there was a wind there, it doesn't make a difference because you had sufficient force to cause the fire to go to the neighboring field. But if your force alone wouldn't cause the fire to go, but it was the wind that caused it to go, so then you're exempt because it's indirect. Mm-hmm. And so we also find the concept of indirect by damages. If you indirectly cause the damage, so then you are putter, you're exempt from paying. So the Gemara has a fascinating question here. So the Gemara asks, Amai? Why are you exempt? Lahavik hazor ruach m'seyaso. Why isn't this equivalent to the laws of Shabbos, to Hilchos Shabbos, where by winnowing, we say that you need to use, when you use the natural wind to cause a separation, so then you violated Shabbos. So the Gemara is saying that even in a case where you alone, your action alone of fanning the fire, would not cause the fire to go to the neighboring field. It wouldn't. And it's only because of the wind that causes it to go to the neighboring field. We should say that you are chayev, that you have to pay for the damages. Why? Because we find that by Shabbos you violate Shabbos just by the wind causing the separation between the kernels and the chaff.
So right? Gemara is asking that you should be chayev even without you fanning it out.
Even without you fanning it, wasn't enough. Which is the equivalent to you not fanning at all.
But I think.
But what's the connection? Where does this question come from?
Ah, so that's a great question.
What's Mazashach?
So Itan is asking a question. We're asking a question from Hilchos Shabbos to the laws of damage, right?
Hmm.
We're saying by Hilchos Shabbos, having the wind play a role, we see that the wind playing a role you could violate Shabbos even though the wind played a role. You weren't the one that separated; it was purely the wind. So, just because of Shabbos, we see that the wind playing a role could still cause you to violate Shabbos. So then, so too, with regards to the laws of damages, we should say that even though you weren't involved, or at least you were minimally involved, not sufficiently involved, but because the wind was involved, so then you should also be required to pay for the damages.
So we see from Shabbos that using the wind is as if you did it. And when you harness the power of the force...
With regards to the laws of Shabbos. With regards to the laws of Shabbos.
But that means that you... That's your action. So if that's my action when it comes to Shabbos, this is my action also over here. It's not the wind that damaged his property. It's me that damaged the property.
Yeah, so that definitely is the going assumption of the question. That is the assumption of the question. We'll see what one of the answers is in a second. But that the assumption of the question is to say that just like the wind by Shabbos... It has to be viewed as me. I have to do the action on Shabbos. I guess a natural wind, I'm not sure if it has to be natural or not natural, but let's say natural wind would cause Zora, the Malacha of Zora, and you would violate it. So it's like it's my action. So too, when it comes to the fire, if it's a natural wind, so then I would also be required to pay because it's as if I did it. We could say that a natural wind is it's as if I also performed that action. I'm not sure it's because you're supposed to assume that that wind is going to come, so therefore it's as if it's my action or not. But at least we're at least within the question stage, we're assuming that it's as if it's my action. Fine. Right? So also, Rav Lichtman addressed a separate point of, let's say I was not involved when it comes to the fire, but I also have violated it. So I'm not sure. If I wasn't involved at all, I'm not sure if I would have, if I didn't help somewhat, so then, I don't know, I'm not sure if I could say the wind alone would be viewed as my action.
Or what are you doing by Zura?
You are starting the process by throwing it up in the air.
But they, you're not starting the process of separating.
You're not starting the process of,
if there was no wind, you would have done nothing.
You potentially are starting the process of separating.
If there's no wind, if you're in a vacuum, or you're
indoors, if you throw it up at the end with no wind, so then it still will cause
back down in the same spot.
But it will still cause minimal.
It'll cause scattering, but not separating.
But it will cause minimal scattering,
which means that you're scattering is not a problem.
The heavy things are not going
to. Scattering is not a problem. But if I have forks and spoons and knives on Shabbos that are all mixed up, and I want to separate them, so I can scatter them. And
but you are at least starting. But you're starting a process. You are.
I'm not starting the process of separating.
It is.
I'm simply throwing it up in the air.
Weights.
The wind is doing everything.
No, but they're very different weights. Like your example of the cutlery.
But they'll all come back down.
No, but if I lift it, I just throw it up in the air. It will cause some form of separation. It will cause some form of separation. It wouldn't be what you want.
So if I take my forks and spoons and I throw them across my dining room table, that's not called separating. It's called scattering. Scattering is okay.
Okay, well, what happens if half those were plastic? Right,
that's one of the...
Correct. That's what something you could do. But
they bring that down, that if you want to separate all your stuff, you want to set the table Friday night and all your stuff is scattered together, so you just scatter it, and then you can pick it. Because scattering is not a problem.
But I think this also causes separation, not just scattering.
That also...
I'm not sure if you have to even go that far. At the very least, he's involved. He's somewhat involved. I don't know if you could call the... If it was just purely the wind alone, without your involvement, I'm not sure if that...
That's not Zora either, right? If you keep the pile in your sedan, and then the wind comes and separates it...
No, for sure you didn't violate anything, because you need to be actively involved.
You need to be actively, so that's against what you're saying, isn't it?
No, but the question is, what about by... And by damages also, if you're not actively involved...
If you didn't start the fire, what do you have to do with it? Nothing.
Right, so I definitely have to start the fire. It has to be my fire. The question is, do I have to do any level of fanning?
Like, do I have to...
The Gemara says, if your fanning would have been enough, your fire...
It doesn't say started the fire, but...
It doesn't say that.
If you didn't start the fire, then it's not your fire.
What's on your property?
No, but still... No, it is on your property, but
I'm a chayav for if you come onto my property and light a fire, that's your fire, that's not my fire.
Yeah, I mean, if the fire just exists,
your furnace goes on fire, whatever. I mean, this is damages, right? You have the fire starts off on your property, and you're responsible for it. If you don't,
am I responsible for that? If there's no pshia, if there's no negligence involved,
in halacha, I don't think you're obligated to pay.
That's not against what this is saying. That's exactly what this is saying. That if he's not involved with it,
if he's not involved, then he's exempt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has to fan it. He's trying to say that...
No, but I'm saying within this question, it's saying that the wind would cause you to violate
it. Right. If I lit a fire in a way where a normal wind, right, or a normal wind can take it and blow it into my neighbor's yard, so I would be obligated for that,
yeah,
even if I didn't fan it at all.
Yeah, I think that's what's exactly what this is the case here, too.
I think that's what the Gemara is asking, is that you should be chayav for that.
The question is, what happens if you didn't fan at all? Okay, so I'm not sure.
Okay.
So the Gemara at first, the ... is that the Gemara gives a few different answers. All the answers are essentially saying that this is an abnormal wind where it's totally unexpected. This is such a strong wind. That's essentially what those answers are saying, right? So they're basically agreeing to the question, and they're saying it's true. If it were to be a natural wind, we should learn from Shabbos. It's just that the case that we're dealing with here is where it's an abnormal wind. That's what the ... is. Those are the few answers that the Gemara gives before we get to Rav Ashi. Now the Gemara gets to Rav Ashi. And Rav Ashi has a fascinating distinction between Shabbos and the laws of damages. Rav Ashi Amar. Rav Ashi says, Ki amrinon zore uveruach mesayaso. When we discuss zore, hani mili in Shabbos. When we say that you violate zore because you throw it up and the wind takes it, that's only with regards to Shabbos. Why? De melechas machsheves asr Torah. Because the Torah said that a constructive action is forbidden. Aval hacha groma ba'almahu v'groma b'nezikin pater. When it comes to Shabbos, we care about melechas machsheves. In this context, usually melechas machsheves is a reason to exempt somebody. Here it's a reason to obligate somebody. And over here, melechas machsheves means that we care about the intent. It's about, the focus is on the intent. All we require for Shabbos is that you perform a constructive action. Over here, did you perform a constructive action? Was it a purposeful action? Right, melechas machsheves is a little hard to define, but let's say a purposeful, constructive action. Yes, you performed it. So with regards to Shabbos, even though you had the wind involved, you would violate Shabbos. Aval hacha, but over here, when it comes to damages, groma bi'amahu, v'groma b'nezikin pater. When it comes to damages, it's not just about the intent. It's also about the direct damage. It has to be a direct result of your actions. Over here, it wasn't the direct result of your actions. Over here, it was caused by the wind. So when it comes to damages, so over here, Rav Ashi is saying, similar to what Eitan was saying, that we should differentiate between the laws of Shabbos and the laws of damages. By Shabbos, we care about your intent. It's not about the means of how you get there, but it's really about the intent itself. When it comes to the laws of damages, that's really about the action itself, but not about the intention. But what we can get from this, with regards to the laws of Shabbos, just ignoring how this impacts the laws of damages, which is also a fascinating topic for this Gemara, just with regards to the laws of Shabbos, this Gemara seems to be saying that I don't care about the means of how you get there. Whether it's direct or indirect, it doesn't make a difference. All I care about is the intent. If you have intention to cause a significant action, however way you do it, so then you violate Shabbos. Which would mean, if I just took this Gemara alone, I would say that pouring water onto the cement and it trickling down onto the grass should be a problem, if that's my intention. Assuming that's my intention, so then I would say that should also be a problem.
Mm.
Right? Because all we care about is intention. Just like when it comes to the wind, all I care about is my intention. So then, so too over here, all I should care about is my intention. Even though there's an outside force, it doesn't make a difference. It's all about my intention.
Isn't that what we said about Zora too? We said it's about the intention of what we're trying to do.
For Zora?
Yeah.
Well, that was a big discussion that we had. That was a big dispute, whether it's the intention to... It was the... Not intention, it was about initiating, just putting the seeds in the ground, even if it plants, if it takes root months later, or it's actually having it take root. Is the violation the end result of planting, or is it just the initiation of that? It's not, the focus of that dispute wasn't about intent, it was more on just initiating it.
What comes out, according to Rav Ashi, is that groma by Shabbos should be chayav.
What comes out according to Rav Ashi is that groma by Shabbos should be chayav. It comes out that we shouldn't care about the means. It's all about the intention. And the means we should just ignore. Which, that's the simple explanation of Rav Ashi. And that also It seems to be that's what Rashi says and his understanding of the word. Again, others argue with Ravashi. But not necessarily with regards to this point. But let's see Rashi. Rashi seems to be saying this within Ravashi. Rashi says, Melechas Machsheves, what's the problem for Shabbos? Niskaima Machshevaso, his intention was fulfilled. Denichalei Beruach Mesayaso, because he wanted, it was good for him to have the wind help out in the process. So even if you have some outside source helping out in the process, that would be a violation of Shabbos. That would be a biblical violation of Shabbos. So what comes out according to this so far for Ravashi is that the whole concept of grama, the whole concept of having an indirect outside source, does not play a role with regards to Shabbos. It could play a role with regards to the laws of damages, but it would not play a role with regards to Shabbos. From the fact that we see that the wind could help in terms of being over on a biblical violation.
So I have a question. So this sounds like the exact same thing as Borer now. When we first started, we said, okay, Borer can be done in different ways. There's Borer with wind, there's Borer with hands, there's Borer with Kli.
Okay.
Right? There's three different ways of doing it. This sounds like this has nothing to do with being done with the wind. The wind doesn't add. The Chiddush is that wind doesn't detract. Right? This is Borer. Don't think that it's that. Don't think that you're putter because it's grama, because you use the wind. Because using the wind is,
doesn't make a difference. We don't care. Essentially, we don't care about the means as long as you get to the end result.
So then this is Borer. There is no difference between this and Borer.
Which is what the Gemara says.
Not exactly. The Gemara seems to be saying that it's a different form of Borer. It's doing Borer through another means. This is not.
Well, the means
being mechayev you for another action. It's saying don't think that you're putter.
It is. In the end of the day, it is through another means. The other means might be insignificant. How you do it might be insignificant, but in the end of the day, it is one's through the wind, one's through your hand, and one's through a filter.
So but it's not that this malacha is causing separation through the wind. It's the malacha is causing separation. And the wind doesn't detract from that.
But what is causing the separation? It's the wind. So there is a difference between this and Borer. Borer could be with your hand. I mean, the Gemara has their question. It says it's all the same thing. So they are all the same thing. It happens to be that it's through different means. But they are all the same thing. I'm not sure if it's... The means, we don't care about. At the end of the day, but it is through different ways. Zohar is through the wind. Borer is with your hand. It might not play a role. But ultimately, according to this understanding, which is Rashi's understanding, so then there really wouldn't be, according to this simple way of understanding Rashi, I think this is the Pshat in Rashi, that there wouldn't, according to Rashi's understanding of Rav Ashi, is that there would not be a concept of grama by Shabbos, with regards to Shabbos.
Yeah, if you met the other requirements of Borah, so you're doing the Ochel Midrach Psoles.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure this is Ochel Midrach Psoles.
That's a machlokes whether this would be Ochel Midrach Psoles.
Okay, let's say this is Ochel Midrach Psoles.
Yeah.
And you're doing it Miyad.
Yeah.
So is this fine. Worse than Biyad?
Yes, it is. We'll get to Borer as to why you need Biyad, but it is worse than Biyad. Yeah. It is worse. Okay, that's Rashi's understanding of the Gemara. The Rush understands the Gemara very differently. And this is on the last page. The Rush says as follows. He says, what did Rav Ashi mean? He says, Rav Ashi is very limiting. And it's specifically to Zohar. This is not a rule that you can apply to all of Shabbos. He says, he reads the Gemara as follows. The Hasam, Rav Ashi says, don't compare Shabbos to the laws of damages. The Hasam melechas machsheves asr Torah. The Torah asserted an action which is a significant action. Af al pi delohav el grama be'alma. Even though this is grama, because this is indirect, right? Every action of winnowing of Zohar is indirect. Still, because the Torah asserted a significant action, bahachi chai v'Torah. This is the significant action for the Torah. Why? Kevan de melacha zu, with regards to this melacha, it's unique to this melacha. De melacha zu, The Rush is focusing on this malacha of winnowing of Zorah, Iker Asiyasa Alide Ruach. The main way to perform this action of winnowing is through an outside source. It's through the wind. Aval, just to finish off the Gemara, Aval Hacha Grama Be'alma V'Grama Be'Nezikin Patur. So don't compare Shabbos to Nezikin, to damages, where Grama is always, when it's indirect, it's always going to be an exemption. But let's just focus on the first part, on Shabbos. What he's saying here is that the Torah asserted Melechas Machsheves, which is the normal way to perform a constructive, purposeful action. The normal way to do that. When it comes to winnowing, winnowing is unique. It's a malacha which is pure, is unique because the main way to perform the action of winnowing is through an outside source. You will not have this by any of the other 38 malachos. By any of the other 38 malachos, the main way to perform that action, that forbidden action, is not through an outside source. It's through your action alone. It's through your own activity. It's only by winnowing where the normal way to perform this action is through an outside source. And so the definition of winnowing is to perform an action through the wind. That is what the malacha is. The malacha is defined as initiating a process where now the wind will finish it off. And that's the normal way to do it. And so according to the Rush, even by Shabbos, there's a concept called grama. By the other 38 malachos, you can have an exemption if it's done indirectly. So if you pour the water on the cement and it trickles down into the grass, there will be an exemption. Because the normal way to plant is through pouring water onto the grass directly. That's the normal way. If you do it indirectly, there's an exemption. By winnowing, the normal way to winnow is by using the wind. It's specifically by using the wind. And so therefore, there will not be an exemption of grama, but it's only with regards to this specific malacha. And so the Rush says that Zorah is a very unique malacha. It's very unique because the definition of the malacha itself is about using an outside source.
So why is it a malacha? If in general grama is pater, so...
Because here, grama is only pater because it's not normal to use an outside source by all other malachos. It's not like grama stam.
But why are we making this a malacha then? So what makes this a malacha?
No, the only time you have an exemption is when... The exemption is that it's not normal. That's really what the exemption is. The exemption is that it's not normal. To use an outside source is not normal. Over here, it's normal to use an outside source. So why shouldn't this be a malacha?
To water the grass is not normal to do it by pouring it on the cement.
The normal way is to pour water on the grass directly. Because it makes sense. It's not just that it's normal. It's if you want the water to go on the grass, so then just do it directly. Pour water on the grass.
But what if you could separate, not necessarily with the wind, and you choose the wind to separate it? So are you potter in that case?
Asking if I'm separating something which is not normally separated with wind.
The wind, and I use the wind because it's grama. If it's not the normal way, you just...
So I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that, because I'm not sure if it's just that once that became the norm with regards to winnowing, so then just any time you do this, it's just that's part of the malacha. That just the wind is now part of the malacha.
That's one of the examples that are brought down is like peanut shells. If you have peanuts and peanut shells, you want to blow the peanut shells away and the peanuts stay behind. Like that's not the normal
blow
way.
Blow with your mouth?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's not the normal way to... separate peanut shells from peanuts.
Okay.
So what Eitan's saying is that in that case where it's not normal, that should be mutter. Because that's not the normal way.
Well, in that case, I would say as follows. This will direct to your issue in a minute. According to the Rush, let me ask you the following question. According to the Rush, what would the Rush hold in your case where I would just blow with my mouth instead of with the wind?
That's not grama. That's me.
First of all, it's not grama, it's me. But I would entertain the possibility, more than just entertain the possibility, I would think that for the Rush there would be an exemption here.
It's not
the malacha of winnowing.
Yeah.
The malacha of winnowing is to use the wind. It's specifically to use the wind.
I am using wind.
I'm not using the wind. I'm blowing. That's not the wind.
It's not using air.
It's not using
the wind.
It's not using the natural wind.
You're controlling the wind.
I'm controlling the blow.
But how do you know that the malacha is not to use air?
A ruach in general is... For him, the definition of malacha is to cause separation through an... I think it's through an outside source. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Ruach apeinu.
What?
Ruach apeinu.
Ruach apeinu?
Apeinu.
You're right. Well, we're going to get to that in Rabbeinu Chananel. Not through your nose, but through your mouth. So I'm not sure. Maybe for the rush, through your mouth is also viewed as wind.
How are you reading the words Melechus Machshavas here in the rush?
Melechus Machshavas Asur Torah, he says that I think for him it's about the normal way. For him it's the normal, the Torah Asur and Shabbos, the normal constructive way. And so when it comes to winnowing, it's normal to use an outside source. Which also, it gives you an insight into grama. The whole concept of doing something indirect, that it's an exemption, it's not just because it's indirect, per se, but it's because it's abnormal when it's indirect. It's more than just it being indirect, it's because now it's abnormal. If you have a malacha like Zorah, where it's normal to be indirect, so then that would be a violation. So it's more about it being normal than about it being, or abnormal, than about it being indirect. So I wasn't sure about, according to the Rush, whether if you were to blow yourself without using the wind. I hear what you're saying, that maybe by blowing that is viewed as the wind. Rabbeinu Chananel does say, that's the next source, he does say that using your just by blowing you have violated Shabbos. He just says, V'niach babruch piv v'bira chashev hu kizor, that if you use your mouth to blow, so then you do violate Shabbos. I'm not sure if the Rush would agree to that or disagree to that. I'm just not sure about that. But ultimately, what it comes down to is that, according to this Rush now has a fascinating explanation in terms of the Malacha of Zorah. And he says that Zorah is the one and only Malacha, where its definition is about using an outside source. It's about you being indirect. It's definitionally indirect. And so therefore...
Why is that different than, like, baking?
Baking?
You're using the fire, right? Mm-hmm. To do the malacha.
We'll get to baking. Baking, we'll also discuss by baking.
Is that not also using another force?
No, it might
using
be.
The heat?
What?
By baking...
You've also turned on
No, I may have turned it on before Shabbos.
You're saying, what if you bake using the sun?
That's rabbinic.
That's rabbinic prohibition.
But even if I bake, the fire is on before Shabbos, and I put it in, I'm utilizing the heat. That's not me. I'm not doing anything. I put it in a spot where the heat could bake it. So I put this in a spot where the wind could blow it. It's...
Okay, I'm not sure how to answer that. He doesn't say that this is the only malacha, necessarily, but so I'm not sure exactly how to answer by baking. Baking
is not considered grumma, right?
Well, that's a big discussion.
Well, he's
it's a big discussion.
Baking
also.
That's how else you bake without a fire.
You always need the fire.
Well, you put the dough together, and you have to actually put the whatever it is you're baking, you have to make it.
Right. Okay, but
just put the dough together is not a violation of Shabbos. It's just when you
put
it in the fire.
Lush,
but it might not be. It's not.
But even if you did that before Shabbos,
it's not just the action of putting it into the fire. It's the action of putting it into the fire and then waiting till it actually bakes. We'll get to baking. They discuss grama by baking, and I think actually now that I recall. There are those that say that grama doesn't apply by baking because it is
the rush.
It would be based on this. It would be a similar idea as to this rush. I think they discussed this, that grama may not apply by baking.
Good question.
But yeah, it is a good question, and it's discussed. Okay, so just to we're basically running out of time, but just to review what we did we first discussed what the malacha is. So the malacha is either about separating through the wind. A form of separation, which is like borer, or the other way of understanding it is that it is the Yerushalmi, which is just not about separating good from bad, but it's just scattering with the wind. Then the second discussion we had was about the means of the wind. Whether the wind, according to this Rush, the wind is really the definitional part of this melacha, that you're using the wind for it. So just to focus on the first part, in terms of just practically, some practical applications, the Rambam, which is the next verse, I won't quote it inside, the Rambam, seemingly the Shulchan Aruch, and many others, the Bir Halacha and Rabbi Akiva Eiger, they hold like the Bavli, that the definition of Zora is just about separating. It is about separating with the wind. The Ramah has the following comment, and this is the last source. The Ramah says, Harukik Baruch B'Shabbos V'Haruach Mafazer Haruk Chayev Mishim Zora, which is basically a quote of the Yerushalmi. So the Ramah seems to hold like the Yerushalmi, as does the Magen Avraham. But again, the Shulchan Aruch does not quote any such concept, and Rabbi Akiva Eiger and the Bir Halacha, they all argue on this Ramah. So it ends up being a machlokas, a big machlokas, and there are even those that reinterpret the Ramah to say that he doesn't say what he's really saying. And this will have various ramifications, just practical ramifications. They discussed, let's say it's Erev Pesach on Shabbos. Erev Shabbos falls on Erev Pesach, and you have crumbs on your table. Are you allowed to take the crumbs and throw them into the wind? Take all those crumbs and throw them into the wind so that they're no longer in your house. Because you're eating, you're having bread, and Erev Pesach, Shechal B'Shabbos, it falls out on Shabbos.
Maybe so, feeding, I heard that the problem is you might feed something.
That's the problem?
I've heard that's why you're not supposed to throw your crumbs out the window. It's because you might feed something.
Really? The Shulchan Aruch says it's allowed. The Shulchan Aruch says that you could throw it, because he doesn't hold like the Yerushalmi. According to the Yerushalmi, this should be a problem.
Why should it be a problem?
Because you're causing a whole pile to now scatter.
That's not your intention. Your intention is not to scatter it. Your intention is just to get rid of it.
Well, then that gets into like Malachashin, secretion of the Nichalei. Yeah, so it might be it would be an Isidur, potentially an Isidur Rabbanim.
He says, "Kol davar shemechusar la'uach," and it doesn't matter what your
intention. No, like intention plays a role. In general, intention does play a role because of.
Well, really, because spitting into the wind. What's the whole idea of the spitting into the wind? What's your intention in spitting in the wind?
It's a good question. It's a good question.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the point. Is that even if you have no intention, the actual act of dispersion is what's not allowed.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Shami is definitely saying no intention.
Sounds like a good question.
That sounds like a good question. Yeah. And there are opinions that say that it's still a biblical prohibition. So I'm not sure if it's going according to those. But it is a good question. And so also, just finally, to get into sprays. So this is also like, this is for with regards to a lot of things. Any form of sprays, sprinklers, assuming it's not going on grass anyways, and let's say toy guns, to use like a toy water gun. According to the Yerushalmi, it should be a problem.
Toy water guns aren't allowed?
According to the Yerushalmi, it should be a problem.
Water gun, not separating it. Sprays in one line.
But eventually it spreads bottle. Out. Eventually it does spray out.
Yeah, not a super sucker thing.
So you would say there are those that say that according to the Yerushalmi this should be a problem. Like the Lam Tes Malachos, that set of the Lam Tes Malachos is machmer not to use these things.
Not to use aerosol?
Yeah, not to use sprays. Really? He says to be machmir, but I think the vast majority of poskim are makel. They're lenient. A, this is only the Yerushalmi. A lot don't. The Ramah quotes it. The Shulchan Aruch is makel, Rabbi Akiva Eiger is makel, and the Bir Halacha reinterprets the Ramah to say that he's not talking about Zora. He's really talking about carrying four amos. He has a whole different explanation in the Ramah. So the Bir Halacha himself is also lenient. Independent of that, there are those like Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe says that even if you want to hold like the Yerushalmi and like this Ramah, that's only when it's the wind, and the wind is causing it. Over here, it's all your force. You're causing the pressure. For the spray, you're causing the pressure. With the toy gun, you're causing the pressure. You're putting pressure onto the gun, and that's what's causing it. It's not being done through wind, but it's being done through...
But Moshe is machmer for the Yerushalmi, though? He just says that these
are... I have to look back. I don't think he's machmer for the Yerushalmi, but I think he says that even if you hold like the Yerushalmi, we would be makel anyways, because it's not... It's not being done through the wind. It's being done through your force. Mm. So I think most are Mekel. There are, Rav Yosher is also Mekel. The Lam Tes Malachos book is Machmer, along with a few other poskim who are Machmer, but I do believe that the majority of poskim are Mekel with regards to this. Okay, that's the one class on winnowing.